On Front Next, breaking news, multiple cities on edge tonight in the wake of police-involved fatal shootings. Brooklyn Center bracing for a fifth night of unrest as the officer who shot Dante Wright makes her first court appearance. And in Chicago, police release body cam video of a 13-year-old teen shot and killed by police. Police say the teen was holding a handgun at the time of the shooting. The family's attorney is disputing that tonight. Plus, Republican Congressman Jim Jordan berating Dr. Anthony Fauci tonight for Americans losing their freedoms because of the pandemic. Fauci's response ahead. Let's go out front. And good evening. I'm Erin Burnett. Out front tonight, two cities on edge in the U.S., Brooklyn Center, Minnesota, bracing for a fifth night of unrest as the now former police officer accused of killing a 20-year-old black man made her first court appearance. And in Chicago, fear tonight of unrest as well after police body camera video is released showing an officer shooting and killing 13-year-old teen Adam Toledo. I want to warn you that this video is very difficult to watch.
Stop! Hey, show me your head! Stop it! Stop it! Shots fired! Shots fired! Get an ambulance up here now!
All right, we're going to have much more on that developing story later in the show. I want to start, though, with Brooklyn Center tonight. Officer Kim Potter made her first appearance before a judge via Zoom today. She shot and killed Dante Wright during a traffic stop on Sunday. She mistook her gun for a taser, according to the former police chief, who also stepped down in the wake of this. Her hearing today lasted 4 minutes and 30 seconds, and her next hearing is now scheduled for May 17th. She is charged with second-degree manslaughter, which carries a maximum sentence of 10 years in prison and or a $20,000 fine. Today, Wright's mother saying she wants 100% accountability because she says there is no justice.
Everybody keeps saying justice. But unfortunately, there's never going to be justice for us. The justice would bring our son home to us, knocking on the door with his big smile, coming in the house, sitting down eating dinner with us, going out to lunch, playing with his almost two-year-old son, giving him a kiss before he walks out the door. So there, justice isn't even a word to me. I do want accountability, 100% accountability.
Family also announcing today that Wright's funeral will be next Thursday. Meanwhile, the city remains on edge after four nights of protests. Officials say there were about 24 arrests last night. That's more than 140 total since the protests began. The majority of those arrested were not local residents. Adrian Broaddus is out front in Brooklyn Center tonight, where she has been covering this since the beginning. So, Adrian, what is the latest that you're seeing tonight, especially as I know you have been there every night as crowds have gathered?
Erin, I can tell you folks from the community are remixing their form of protesting. Earlier today, this chain link fence went up. It's a way to keep them back. But instead of chanting and playing music at this hour, they are hanging car air fresheners like the one you see here. You'll remember Dante Wright called his mother when he was pulled over, and he told his mother he was pulled over because he had air fresheners hanging from his rearview mirror. And that officer who shot and killed him spent time in court today via Zoom.
Tonight, former Brooklyn Center Police Officer Kim Potter making her first court appearance via a Zoom hearing. The 48-year-old officer who wore a plaid shirt spoke once, answering, "Yes, I am," when the Hennepin County judge asked if she was present. The hearing lasted less than 5 minutes, with Potter scheduled to be back in court next month. She is out of jail after posting bond. Potter faces a second-degree manslaughter charge for shooting Dante Wright during a traffic stop on Sunday. While the 26-year veteran of the force hasn't publicly told her side of the story, Brooklyn Center's police chief said before he resigned, he believed the shooting was accidental, with Potter pulling her gun instead of her taser by mistake.
Can we get a conviction?
Can we?
Can we get something? Manslaughter? Y'all see the difference? This is a taser. This is a taser. But no, my nephew was killed with this, a Glock.
While Potter was in court, Wright's family and one of their attorneys was in church, using this pulpit to push for accountability.
We're still going to bury our son. We're still never going to be able to see our baby boy that we're never going to have again. So when people say justice, I just shake my head.
So it's very difficult for this family to accept that this is an accident when you have a veteran who's been on the police force for 26 years.
With protests continuing for a fourth straight night, officials brought in new concrete barriers outside the Brooklyn Center Police Station, the site of many protests.
We're thankful that tonight the tension and the anxiety and the stress seem to be lower, even though emotions are still high.
According to police, about 24 people were arrested. The majority don't live in Brooklyn Center.
But we will stop violence and criminal activity. We will not abandon the city and the citizens of Brooklyn Center.
Meanwhile, many of the protesters here tonight say this barrier is a representation of keeping them away. They are trying to break down other barriers, invisible barriers, and they want to push for equity and equality. And tonight, they've also plastered a sign on the fence that says, "Bring more charges against Kim Potter." And in bold black letters, it says, "Murder charges." Next week, Dante Wright's family will lay him to rest. The funeral will take place in Minneapolis at New Salem Missionary Baptist Church. Aaron.
All right, Adrian, thank you very much for your reporting. And I want to go now to John Burris, a criminal defense and civil rights attorney who represented Rodney King, along with Stephanie Rawlings Blake, the former mayor of Baltimore during the Freddie Gray case, and a former defense attorney. So, John, you heard Adrian's reporting there at the end when she's talking about what she's seeing there, right? That there's these signs, bring more charges, murder. Is it likely that prosecutors will upgrade the charges from second-degree manslaughter like they did in the Derek Chauvin case or not, John?
I doubt it in large measure because the statements that the officer made at the time clearly indicated that she intended to use a taser. And as a consequence of that, that's the mental state that she had. Mm-hmm. And so for the prosecutor to evaluate her conduct, they have to look not only at what she actually did, but what's her mental state at the point in time. Here, mental state clearly was suggesting that she wanted to use a taser. To me, that represents criminal negligence on her part, that we've seen that in the Oscar Grant case that I was involved in. Same kind of situation. We charged the officer with murder in the second degree, but the jury found him with involuntary manslaughter, and largely because they were willing to accept that the officer made a mistake, that it was not intentional. And so for the prosecutor in this case, they would have to come up with some kind of mental state to suggest that it was not negligence and that she intended to do what she did in terms of using the firearm. Unfortunately, her statements belie that and suggest otherwise. So I would doubt that additional charges would be filed in this case. Even though I understand the human interest in it, it's still a real question of what can you prove? In this case, it strikes me that best they could prove is involuntary manslaughter.
So, Mayor Rawlings Blake, is it possible we could see a plea deal in this case? And you know, you've been there, obviously, you're a defense attorney, but as mayor of Baltimore, would the community accept that?
I think it would be hard for the community to accept a plea deal without something else. I think they would need to see from the police department, from the mayor, that there's going to be real changes in the way policing is done in Brooklyn Center. There's no reason why a taser is pulled or a gun is pulled for an air freshener or for an expired tag. There's just no reason. So they have to do more than just the plea. It would have to be something substantial in order for the community to accept it.
So, John, I want to play again something that Dante Wright's aunt said today as she held up the two pictures. You saw it in Adrian's piece. One was a Glock, one was a taser. But let me just play this moment again for you.
Y'all see the difference? This is a taser. This is a taser. But no, my nephew was killed with this, a Glock.
And John, the family's attorney, Ben Crump, you know, we heard him say it's very difficult for the family to accept this as an accident when you have a veteran who's been on the police force for 26 years. You know, they're emphasizing her experience on the force as a reason why they're unable to accept that this was accidental. Now, you mentioned the case of Oscar Grant, which, of course, you were involved in, the 22-year-old black man who was shot and killed by an officer at the Fruitvale BART station in California. And you talk about the jury. They're willing to accept that the officer meant to fire his taser. When you look at this situation and what we saw, you talk about her state of mind. It was clear that she was talking about firing her taser and meant to fire her taser. How important will her experience be, 26-year experience be, in proving otherwise?
Experience obviously counts, and the question how much experience she actually had in using the taser. Not all officers have had that kind of experience. But at the end of the day, the relevant questions are going to be, regardless of her experience, what was her state of mind? What did she intend to do? And those questions will get asked. She could have 26 years of experience and never having dealt with a taser, or she could have 1 year of experience. It doesn't really matter. If she made a mistake at that point in time, it's the mental state that she had. And at that point in time, she announced taser, 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 which then creates the impression her mental state was to use that of a taser. I don't excuse it. I'm only saying that's what the facts look like, and I can see what the prosecutors will have. And I understand why the community is very, very upset about it, because there is a huge difference between a Glock and that of a taser. So I get it.
As a picture shows, Mary Rawlings Blake, let me ask you one thing, because, you know, you're saying the community needs more, right? They need to understand, you know, how there'd be no situation in which it would justify using a taser for air fresheners or expired tags or whichever it may have been. But the officer did know, you know, because they ran Dante Wright's license, that there was an outstanding warrant for a weapons charge. Will that help her at all in the eyes of the jury, that perhaps that made her more afraid or more likely to reach for that, unfortunately, gun?
No, I don't think that that would matter. I mean, again, it's an outstanding warrant for a weapons charge when he does not have a weapon on him. They have his name, they have his address, they have the car that they know he's driving. These are things that, you know, if he were to drive away, they know where to get him. He was not, the level of threat does not reach using deadly force.
All right. Thank you both very much. And as I mentioned earlier, we also have a developing story in Chicago tonight, where video release shows an officer involved shooting of a 13-year-old boy, Adam Toledo. The young boy was killed last month after officers responded to a shots fired alert. So they got a shots fired alert. They go to the scene. They chase the teen. Within seconds, an officer opens fire when police say Toledo had a gun in his hand. Now, I want to warn viewers that the video we're about to show you is disturbing and difficult to watch. Ryan Young is out front in Chicago covering this. So, Ryan, this video just coming to light. The mayor and Toledo's family have called for calm in the wake of this shooting. Tell me what the situation is like on the ground there and what you know about what happened here.
Well, there is a lot of tense emotions in this city. In fact, all around the city, they've already pre-positioned large pieces of equipment to make sure that if there is sort of any protest, they can protect structures, because obviously last summer we had some very violent protests in the city. At first, it seemed like the city and the family had sort of a joint statement about what was going on. But since this video has been released, the family has been pretty fired up. They say they see something different than what cops say.
Hey, show me your head. Stop.
These few seconds have a city on edge tonight after officials released this body cam video of the shooting death of 13-year-old Adam Toledo by a Chicago police officer. The video shows the officer yelling commands for the 13-year-old to stop running and show his hands. We've slowed down the video to show you what police tell us is a gun in the teen's hand. A few seconds later, the police shooting plays out. Less than 1 second passes from the time the teen starts to turn and when the officer fires. Late Thursday, an attorney for the family disputing reports the teen had a gun in his hand when he was shot.
And this is why I want to be especially clear right now that that child complied. Adam complied with the officer's request, dropped the gun, turned around. The officer saw his hands were up and pulled the trigger.
On March 29th, police responded to the location on the city's west side after ShotSpotter technology alerted them to more than a half dozen gunshots. Video released Thursday appears to show a male shooting toward a car. When a Chicago police officer arrives, a foot chase ensues.
No parent should ever have a video broadcast widely of their child's last moments. Much less be placed in a terrible situation of losing their child in the first place.
Ahead of the videos released Thursday afternoon by the Civilian Office of Police Accountability, an emotional Mayor Lori Lightfoot calling for the city to remain calm.
Even as our understanding of this incident continues to evolve, this remains a complicated and nuanced story. And we all must proceed with deep empathy and calm, and importantly, peace.
And in a joint statement with the city, the boy's family also calling on the city to remain peaceful, in a statement released through their attorney saying the experience was extremely difficult and heartbreaking for everyone present and especially for Adam's family. Adam's memory can be best honored by refraining from violence and working constructively for reform.
Aaron, let's be clear here. The city of Chicago's police department has had a strained relationship with communities of color for years, and this has gone back and forth with the mistrust in the community for the police department. This is really tearing at that wound in this city, because there are people who watch that video and don't believe that it lines up the way police say it does. But when you look at how the police department presented it, it said basically the officer had a split-second decision. He knew he was responding to a shots fired call. He saw that weapon in the young man's hand and felt like he had to fire. The other thing there is, as soon as that shot was fired, he ran over to render aid. But there are a lot of questions tonight about how this was handled. We'll see what happens in the next few hours in terms of whether or not there'll be large-scale protests or not.
All right. Thank you very much, Ryan. And I want to go now to Isaiah McKinnon, former Detroit police chief and also the former deputy mayor of Detroit. And John Burris is back with me. Chief McKinnon, let me just start with you, because, look, this is very disturbing video, but what's in it is obviously extremely important here. Officers were responding to an alert for shots fired. They show up on the scene and they encounter Adam Toledo, 13-year-old in a dark alley. Now, police say he had a gun in his hand and there was a split-second decision. Family says Toledo dropped the gun and the police saw him do that and then shot him anyway. What do you see when you see the video?
I've viewed the video a number of times and it's troubling, but the reality is it shows you how difficult it is for anyone, in particular law enforcement officers, in those kinds of situations. I saw a gun let's go back. I saw the officer chasing this person. And I heard him yell at the man to drop the gun. The person dropped the gun, and I saw him turn. That's a split-second decision that has to be made by the officer. And unfortunately, it was not a wise thing to do, number one, to have a weapon. But number two, when you make those kinds of decisions to make those moves, the officer has a right to protect him or herself.
Right. And does it add up to you, Chief, when you look at, they say split second decision? I mean, literally, you could be talking at such a split second here that a trigger could be being pulled before someone registered that a gun was being dropped. I mean, I when you see this and then you see how the officer behaved afterwards, right, calling for help immediately, trying to get an ambulance, does the police version of this add up to you all in? It sounds like it does.
Yeah, the follow-up even by the officer was above and beyond. But let me tell you, I can recall a situation a number of years ago when I stopped a young man who had a weapon and I told him to drop the gun. It was a toy gun. You don't know that. I didn't shoot the young man. But the fact is that I could have. Now, I'm not trying to justify anything of the fact that these are harrowing situations and split-second decisions. And I listened to the officer. I listened to his partner, whomever it was with him, who were trying to save this young man after this situation. It doesn't make it better in terms of losing one's life. But the reality is that this is one of those situations where we don't want to happen. But everyone wants to go home to their families.
Right, right. And it, you can understand it. John, let me ask you, you know, police release, you know, an edited video of what happened as well, with an arrow pointing to what they say is the gun in Adam Toledo's hand. Body camera from one of the officers also clearly shows a gun near Toledo's body after the shooting. But the lawyer for the family is, you know, they are insisting and that he didn't have a gun in his hand when he was shot. Let me just play what she said.
If he had a gun, he tossed it. The officer said, show me your hands. He complied. He turned around. If you're shooting an unarmed child with his hands in the air, it is an assassination.
Look, that's a pretty... it's a pretty incredible thing to say, okay? So when you look at that, John, and you see this, having been involved in defense cases, did this look like shooting an unarmed child, like an assassination?
Well, it's a close question. I when I look at something like this, I want to know about the police officer's tactics. Mm-hmm. Did you rush into a situation where you did not allow yourself to be in a position of cover, where therefore you didn't have the real time that was necessary to assess the situation and then shoot or don't shoot? Here was a situation by putting himself in kind of that position. He wasn't in a position to really properly assess whether the child was, in fact, dropping the weapon and turning around. That's the part that I see as dangerous from the police point of view, that they really shouldn't have chased this kid in the way that they did without making sure they had a position of cover so that the kid would be in a position to comply. Here, whether he complied or not, he had no chance. And that's the part that I see as most devastating, that the kid didn't have a chance. And if the other people say if he had a gun, he tossed a gun, was it enough? If the officer was in a position of safety, he could have observed that, as opposed to exercising a split-second decision, if you will, only because he perceived the kid was turning around. That's what I thought was the real problem here, that he didn't give himself an opportunity to assess the situation properly.
So, Chief McKinn, let me ask you about that. You know, this is a dark alley at night. They get a call for, you know, shots fired. You know, they show up. Then it chasing, right? Turns out it's a very young boy. Officer turns around, you know, the boy turns around, officer yells him to stop. The whole thing goes down so quickly. Tell me what goes through an officer's mind during a situation like this.
You know, this is one of those situations that we talked about and discussed for some time. I've chased people. I've been shot at 8 times. Thank God they missed. But the reality is it's a split second decision. And you, as a law enforcement officer who are trained to make those kinds of split-second decisions and not use a term like an assassination, no. Look, you're a law enforcement officer. As a law enforcement officer, you're there to serve and protect, not to assassinate. And I don't think that's the case here. I mean, in all the things that I've been involved in throughout the years, I don't use that term when there's this kind of a situation that occurred. It was a the officer chasing someone who had a gun, and he asked or told the person to drop the gun, and the person made a turn towards him with a gun. And I think we can see that. I can see it. But he didn't toss a gun, based upon what I saw and what other people will see. That's unfortunate that this decision was made to have a gun, first of all, but number two, to get into a chase with an officer who used fatal force.
All right. I appreciate both of you very much. Thank you very much. John, Chief McKinn, thank you.
Thank you.
And next, security preps underway across the country in anticipation of the verdict in the trial of Officer Derek Chauvin, who killed George Floyd. And a nasty war of words today between Congressman Jim Jordan and Dr. Anthony Fauci.
You're making this a personal thing, and it isn't.
It's not a personal thing.
No, you are. That is exactly what you're doing.
Who had the last word? Tonight, police agencies across the country are preparing for possible unrest with a potential verdict just days away in Derek Chauvin's murder. These are live pictures out of Brooklyn Center right now, too, where Dante Wright was shot and killed, and that's just 10 miles away from Derek Chauvin's trial is taking place. And as I said, that verdict is just days away, possibly. Razor wire has been installed around all 5 police precincts in Minneapolis. The D.C. Metropolitan Police Department will be fully activated starting Monday. The mayor of New York City saying they're having constant conversations to prepare. Omar Jimenez is out front. And Omar, emotions are high in Minneapolis, where you are, and of course across the country, as we near the end of this trial.
That's right, Aaron. I mean, to put it simply, this is a very tense Minneapolis area when you look at what's happened with Dante Wright, but of course, as the Chauvin trial begins to wrap up as well. We're outside the Brooklyn Center Police Department right now for a fifth night of demonstrations out here, as again, passions are still high for people want their presence to be known in the name of Dante Wright. But of course, just miles away, the Chauvin trial today, both the defense and the prosecution rested their cases. And while we heard some testimony over the course of today, what we did learn is that jurors would never get the chance to hear from Derek Chauvin and to hear him testify in defense of his own case, because earlier in the day today, he officially pleaded the Fifth Amendment. What we did hear today outside of Chauvin was the return of a familiar face, Dr. Martin Tobin, that pulmonologist that initially testified for the prosecution. He was brought back as a rebuttal to the suggestions that came up during testimony yesterday that a cause of George Floyd's death could have been related to carbon monoxide. And specifically, he pointed to a blood oxygen saturation report and said his, George Floyd's levels were at 98% when he died. And here's how that played out or translated for jurors in the courtroom today.
Does that tell us anything whatsoever about what the carbon monoxide content could have been at a maximum?
Yes, it does. It tells us that if the hemoglobin is saturated at 98%, it tells you all there was for everything else is 2%, and so the maximum amount of carbon monoxide would be 2%.
And what's interesting about that exchange, Aaron, is that we were actually a few words away from a mistrial in this, even after coming all this way, because there is a separate report about a blood gas level report that the defense didn't know about. It was only disclosed to them last minute, last night. Their expert witness had already left town, and the judge was very angry about it today, saying that if that witness brought up that new blood gas report at all over the course of questioning today, he would have declared a mistrial. So the questioning was very precise. That did not happen. And now, of course, we look ahead to closing statements set for Monday. And then, of course, that moment, the preparation of the moment of a verdict that will come later after that in the run-up to what has been, again, a very, very tense time here in the Minneapolis area for almost a year now.
All right, Omar, thank you very much. I want to go now to Tony Romanucci, attorney for the Floyd family and also for the family of Dante Wright. So, Tony, you know, Omar laying out the drama that went on in court today. You know, prosecutors said they got new evidence from the medical examiner last night showing Floyd's carbon monoxide levels were normal. The judge refused to share this new evidence with the jury. You know, prosecutors, they say, knew this theory was going to come up when the trial began. And they didn't bring it up last week when the medical examiner testified. So, you know, obviously, you know, Omar talking about how close this was for a mistrial. But does it concern you that the prosecution missed something like this that could raise doubt?
I really don't think the prosecution missed something. They may have missed an opportunity, but I don't think that they missed anything that the jury hasn't captured. Really, what the defense has been trying to do this whole case is really negate the obvious. The default story here remains the video. Common sense, kneeling for 9 minutes on someone's neck. So this issue about the carbon monoxide, I really think is a sideshow, Aaron. Mm-hmm. And with the testimony today of 98% saturation on the hemoglobin with only the possibility of 2% carbon monoxide, I think they closed the door on that issue.
So we also heard today, Tony, from Derek Chauvin for the first time speaking in court today. He declined to testify in his defense. Here's that moment.
I have advised you, and we have gone back and forth on the matter, would be kind of an understatement, right?
Yes, it is.
And have you made a decision today whether you intend to testify or whether you intend to invoke your Fifth Amendment privilege?
I will invoke my Fifth Amendment privilege today.
Tony, interesting that they had gone back and forth, and it sounded like Derek Chauvin wanted to tell his side of the story, but it's to me sounded like he acquiesced to his attorney's thoughts that it was not a good thing to do. Would you have liked to see him take the stand?
Well, I think we have to play two sides of the coin here. Would I have loved to have heard what he said? Yes. Should he have taken the stand? I think any attorney would have told him, do not take the stand, because I would have been licking my chops at that cross-examination. I would have kept him on that stand for hours going through that video, second by second, asking him, did you relieve the pressure off of his neck at this moment? What about the next moment? Did you hear him say that he couldn't breathe? So it was way too much risk to put him on the stand.
So tonight, we're now bracing for a fifth night of protests in Minneapolis. The Chauvin trial, of course, colliding now with the death of Dante Wright. And obviously, you are representing the Wright family as well. Razor wire has been installed around all five police precincts in Minneapolis-St. Paul. And it's not just there. The D.C. Police Department has mobilized officers starting Monday, taking away time off. New York, Atlanta, Chicago, also preparing. What is the Floyd family's message to anybody who wants to go to the street and protest? And really, I say this, no matter what the verdict is.
Well, first of all, I mean, the Floyd family is not stopping anybody from protesting. Yeah. They do want peaceful protesting. They've said once, they've said it forever, justice for George is justice for all. And so now we have to worry about justice for Dante Wright, justice for Adam Toledo. I'm in Chicago. We have to brace for that tonight. Hopefully it'll be peaceful here too. You know, we're talking, this nation is only talking about policing. We need to look at this concept. We need to look at this issue and really get serious about reform. But in the meantime, it is totally permissible to be out in those streets exercising your First Amendment rights and freedom of speech.
All right. I appreciate your time, Tony. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron.
And next, Congressman Jim Jordan rips into Dr. Anthony Fauci, and Maxine Waters would have none of it.
You need to respect the chair and shut your mouth.
And Biden lowering the boom on Russia. Serious new sanctions just unveiled today.
We cannot allow a foreign power to interfere in our democratic process with impunity.
New tonight, quote, shut your mouth, end quote. Democratic Congresswoman Maxine Waters sending that message to GOP Congressman Jim Jordan after his heated and lengthy exchange with Dr. Fauci today about restrictions to fight the coronavirus pandemic.
Well, in your written statement, you say now is not the time to pull back on masking, physical distancing, and avoiding congregate settings. When is the time? When do Americans get their freedom back? Can you put your microphone on, please?
Sorry. When we get the level of infection in this country low enough that it is not a really high threat.
What is low enough? Give me a number. We had 15 days to slow the spread, turned into 1 year of lost liberty. Are we just going to continue this forever, or when do we get to the point? What measure, what standard, what objective outcome do we have to reach before Americans get their liberty and freedoms back?
You know, you're indicating liberty and freedom. I look at it as a public health measure to prevent people from dying and going to the hospital.
You don't think Americans' liberties have been threatened the last year, Dr. Fauci? They've been assaulted. Their liberties have.
I don't look at this as a liberty thing, Congressman Jordan.
Well, that's obvious.
I look at this as a public health thing.
But
I disagree with you on that.
You think the Constitution is suspended during a virus, during a pandemic? It's certainly not.
This will end for sure when we get the level of infection very low. It is now at such a high level, there's a threat again of major surges.
Dr. Fauci, over the last year, Americans' First Amendment rights have been completely attacked. Your right to go to church, your right to assemble, your right to petition your government, freedom of the press, freedom of speech have all been assaulted. Certainly freedom of speech. I mean, freedom of... A governor of our third largest state meets with physicians, and that video is censored because they dare to disagree with Dr. Fauci. So I just want to know, when do Americans get their First Amendment liberties back?
You know, I don't think anything was censured because they felt they couldn't disagree with me. I think you're making this a personal thing, and it isn't.
It's not a personal thing.
No, you are. That is exactly what you're doing.
So when it comes down, what number do we get our liberties back? Tell me the number.
Tell me the number.
When 90% of the members of Congress get vaccinated.
But you're not a doctor, Mr. Clyburn. He is. What is the number?
Thank you for recognizing me, Mr. Clyburn. Thank
you. Chair now recognizes for 5 minutes.
I'd like my question answered.
Ms. Malone.
Reclaiming my time.
Regular order. Regular order.
No, just a moment.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I don't want you to answer my question. The American people want Dr. Fauci to answer the question. What does it have to be?
Expire, sir. If you need to respect the chair and shut your mouth.
I mean, it's an incredible moment that that occurred. I just, of course, have to state the obvious here. Dr. Fauci never said he believes the Constitution should be suspended. Out front now, Matthew Dowd, who is the chief strategist for the Bush-Cheney 2004 presidential campaign. So, Matthew, look, this is far from the first time we've seen Republicans try to beat up on Dr. Fauci, right? They love this. They want these moments, right? We saw from Jim Jordan today what we saw from Rand Paul not long ago, and that's how it's been. Why is the GOP so obsessed with going after Dr. Fauci?
Well, Aaron, I think this is fundamentally about the attack on science and data. And if it doesn't agree from many of the GOP's perspective, if science or data or knowledge or information doesn't agree with their basically their emotional stand, they want to ignore it. And I think that's the problem I think Dr. Fauci has here, because Dr. Fauci is trying to take a rational approach against people who have an emotional place in this. And the idea that this is about liberty and freedom, that somehow wearing masks, I would ask Jim Jordan, does he wear a seatbelt? Did he get his kids vaccinated when they went to school? All of these sorts of things have nothing to do with liberty or freedom. But that's where we are when we have reason and rationality on one side and emotional reactions and ideology on the other.
So, you know, you mentioned masks, and Jim Jordan obviously usually doesn't wear his, although he did today, and I noticed him actually putting it up over his nose in the middle of part of his rant. However, Republican Senator Ted Cruz has stopped wearing a mask as he goes through the halls of the Capitol or on the Senate floor, right? He will not wear one anymore. This is a photo that Armanu Raju took earlier today. And then here's Cruz defending his decision to ditch his mask to CNN.
At this point, I've been vaccinated. Everyone working in the Senate has been vaccinated.
Matthew, just to state the obvious, of course, many staff members, reporters in the Capitol have not been vaccinated. And it comes on the same day that Pfizer says now people will likely need a booster shot between 6 and 12 months after vaccination, plus more boosters after that. Right. I mean, that's very unsettling. There's a lot we don't know. That's why the CDC says fully vaccinated people should still wear their masks. What's your reaction to Senator Cruz's decision? And again, you know, his decision to so blatantly flaunt it.
Well, you know, and the other added part in this, Aaron, is that the vaccines are not 100% effective. And so even if you have a vaccine or other people have a vaccine, in some people, in some percentage of cases, there is, which is what we know we have to rely on to get to a certain level of vaccines, that there is a certain percentage that will still slough off the virus, or you could still contract the virus in this. I think Ted Cruz, along with our just talking about Jim Jordan, it's a complete example. They don't want to lead in this moment. They either repeat a lie and then tell their constituents a lie, and then their constituents repeat the lie back to them, and then they say they're representing their constituents as opposed to leading. And I would ask Ted Cruz this, granting all the things I just stated about there's no guarantee on vaccines for 100%, doesn't he take it as an obligation to show people correct behavior? It's not just about him, and it's not just about his staff. And it's not just about a friend of his. It's about him as a United States senator showing leadership to the country and encouraging people to do right behavior so we get out of this pandemic.
Well, I mean, you know, look, this is a guy who when he was cold and didn't have water in the Texas crisis that you went through, right,
got
on a plane to go to Cancun. So, you know, we could see what he thinks of first. I want to ask you one thing before we go, Matthew, about Republican Congressman Matt Gaetz. The House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy today, you know, punted on whether anything should happen to Gaetz, you know, noting that no charges have been filed yet, which is true. But what do you make of so many Republicans, you know, basically twisting themselves into pretzels to avoid defending him or calling for any action? And I should just note, regardless of charges being put out there, what is alleged to have happened, what has been shown here through all of these texts is unacceptable behavior for an elected member of Congress.
Well, they had 4 years of twisting themselves into pretzels related to Donald Trump and everything related to Donald Trump. That in any, if a Barack Obama had done 1/10 or 1/100 of what Donald Trump did, they would have been all over it. And, you know, Donald Trump has 20 plus odd women who have accused him of sexual abuse or sexual assault. They twisted themselves into pretzels. So they're one big bag of pretzels. So Matt Gaetz, it doesn't surprise me at all that they're in this position that today, because in for them, the ends justify the means. So if somebody doesn't have integrity but is doing what they want, if somebody is trying to push some stand on an issue, even though their private life might be a complete mess or even their public life might be a complete mess, Donald Trump was their standard, and if they didn't fault Donald Trump in the midst of this, I don't see them faulting the congressman from Florida who seems to have just as many problems as former President Trump.
Incredible. All right, Matthew Dowd, thank you very much, as always, for your perspective. And next, President Biden slams Russia with new sanctions as his administration presents new evidence of what the Russian intel got from the Trump campaign. And Capitol Police Officer William Evans, killed in the line of duty, buried today next to his father in his hometown. Tonight, a Russian intelligence operative who was given internal 2016 campaign polling data by top aides to Donald Trump went on to share that information with Russia's intelligence services. Now, the Biden administration is disclosing this for the first time as they today announced new sanctions against Russians over their interference in U.S. elections, over the SolarWinds cyber attack, and, of course, over the ongoing occupation of Crimea. Biden warning Russia that further meddling would have consequences.
And we cannot allow foreign power to interfere in our democratic process with impunity. If Russia continues to interfere with our democracy, I'm prepared to take further actions to respond.
Evan Perez is out front. And Evan, I mean, let's just take a step back here. You know, in the context of all of this coverage of what happened with Russia and the Trump campaign, this remarkable revelation that a Russian operative got internal data from top Trump campaign aides, a Russian operative, and gave that to the Kremlin. What more are you learning about this?
It really makes you want to reassess the whole Russia collusion thing that the Trump campaign, President Trump, Bill Barr in this building here all said never happened, Aaron. If you look at what this new revelation from the Treasury Department is, Konstantin Kalimnik, according to the U.S. government now, got this polling data that came originally from Paul Manafort. This is something that Paul Manafort and Rick Gates, his partner, they were in business with Konstantin Kalimnik in Ukraine. And the FBI later determined that Kalimnik was very closely tied to the Russian intelligence services. And so what this revelation tells us is that it sort of connects, right, the final part of this puzzle, which is that we know that Manafort and Gates provided this polling data, internal polling data, from the Trump campaign to Kalimnik, and now we know that it ended up from Kalimnik into the hands of the Russian intelligence services. So, look, again, one of the things that the former president said is that this never happened, that there was never any kind of connection between his campaign and the Russians. And now, according to the intelligence services, the U.S. intelligence services, yes, there was.
Yeah, and as you say, this closes that crucial gap that it got from Kalimnik to the Russian intelligence services. So the Biden administration has these sanctions now, Evan. They say they're going to cause real pain. How severe are they, really?
Well, we know that it's going to cut off the U.S. financial firms from trading in Russian bonds directly from the Russian government. They could have gone a lot further, Aaron. This could have been a lot worse. They could have, for example, cut off all access to U.S. dollar financial access. And so that would have been a lot more severe. And they didn't go that far.
All right, Evan, thank you very much. And next, a final farewell to a Capitol Police officer killed in the line of duty. Capitol Hill Police Officer William Billy Evans was laid to rest today following his funeral in Massachusetts. He was buried next to his father. His casket made its way from Washington, where he was honored at the Capitol. Along the trip, his casket was escorted by fellow law enforcement officers paying their respects. Officer Evans was killed in the line of duty on April 2nd. A driver slammed into him while crashing into a barricade at the U.S. Capitol complex. The 41-year-old was a husband and a father of two young children. You see, they're grieving. Our sincerest condolences to them, to his wife, and to the Evans family. Thanks to all of you for being with us. Anderson starts now.